Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Noisecast. I am your host, Alberto Lima, a.k.a. at A-L underscore W-R-I-T-E on Twitter. That's Al Wright on Twitter. And tonight I am joined by my co-host and good friend, Paul Combs. Paul, say hi to the people.
Hey, everyone.
Awesome, awesome. So it's been a little while since our last episode. Our last episode actually was posted in mid-May. So it's been a full month and some change, maybe close to 2 months at this point. And a lot's been going on. We've been keeping busy. In the last episode, I mentioned that I was starting to write for G-Style magazine. I am their photography and camera reviewer. And also on the other side of things, Paul's getting married. So
yeah, I'm getting married.
Yeah, go ahead.
I actually got my wedding paid off like last month. That's an exciting.
Yes, it is. Congratulations, Paul. I'm very happy for you and the future Mrs. Combs, assuming you guys are going the traditional route.
We are. We actually had a long discussion about that, but we did decide to just keep it the traditional route, mainly because she didn't want to sign her. Make her name super long.
That totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. So basically, we're just gonna, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we are a full 6 months into the year. We're really at this point almost past 6.5 months into the year, and a lot's been going on. But at the same time, I find myself not as excited by a lot of the. Technology releases that have been announced so far. There are a handful of things, though, that have caught my attention. In this episode, what we plan on doing is we're going to go over some of the things that have really caught our eye, that have caught our attention, and some of the things that we're looking forward to, you know, in the later parts of 2018 and beyond. So, Paul, before we jump into the technology side of things, with 6 months left in the year, any movies that are on your radar?
Let's see. Well, the movies towards the end of the year, not really. I've had a few good surprises, mm-hmm. though, like Hereditary. Hereditary is probably my favorite movie of recent favorite horror movie of recent memory. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. It's on my watch list, and I've heard really, really good things about it. The last thing that I've seen. A Quiet Place. And I thought that was really well done. I feel like there are certain things that it touches on that I feel like maybe it was done unintentionally, but you know, that's a different conversation. But you know, overall I think it was a very well done movie. The use of American Sign Language was really smart. And it didn't feel like it was just kind of tossed in there. And a lot of that has to do with the little girl who's actually deaf, correct?
Yeah, she is actually deaf, and she was fantastic in that film. I'm really hoping she gets more roles, just because it was great to see a deaf person featured so prominently.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Okay, so we're going to jump right into the tech side of things. And the first thing on my docket tonight is, we'll start off simple. How many of you guys, well, Paul, do you personally have any kind of mobile devices that require or life would be made easier with a Bluetooth keyboard of some kind?
Occasionally, sometimes I'll write drafts on my own show on my phone, mm-hmm. and there's so many misspellings and everything like that because I trust my keyboard a little more than I should sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll get like halfway down the paragraph and I'll look three sentences up and I've misspelled half of the sentence.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, definitely. It's I have a bad tendency of answering emails on my phone. And then I have like really weird autocorrect or auto-replace words in the middle of my replies. And sometimes you'll get like the occasional, like, what the hell are you saying, guy? Response. So... But for me personally, I have a smart TV that is hooked up in my living room. It's pretty much like my entertainment hub. You know, like my wife and I primarily will use the living room TV to kind of just watch Netflix. We even watch YouTube, oddly enough, on the large TV. It's one of those things where I never really thought of ourselves as using often, but it's kind of been one of the things that we kind of go to. It's like one of our, if it were traditional television, it'd be like a go-to channel. But that being said, one of the worst things to do on this TV is try to search for stuff. Because when you have to go and use the remote to kind of hunt and peck letters one at a time, it's a serious pain in the ass. And the reason why I guess we're bringing this all up is because Logitech has a newish wireless Bluetooth keyboard. It's called the Keys to Go. And it, what I personally like about it is it's tiny. It's not a full-size keyboard. So, you know, if that's what you're looking for, you're going to be severely disappointed. It's primarily for road warriors, right? It does, while it itself doesn't have a slot or a connection point where you can attach a mobile device like your phone or your tablet, it does come with kind of like a cradle that you can slide underneath it and it'll hold your device. I'm not really all that interested in that, but it does work with my television and it works with the PlayStation 4. So, you know, if those are the things that, you know, you want to use it for, it's absolutely amazing. The other thing is that it's practically indestructible. They put a really nice, I guess, I don't want to say skin, but like the plastic around it, you know, keeps dirt and dust from going underneath the keys, as is the case with a lot of cheap Bluetooth keyboards. And it can take a spill. I don't recommend, you know, you run it under the kitchen sink, but if you just happen to have a little wine accident, you don't have to worry about having to replace the whole keyboard.
Well, the fact that it can take a spill is definitely a selling point in my mind, because just based on what I read about it earlier, I'm actually considering it because I'm wanting to get I have a HT PC set up in my living mm-hmm. room where I just primarily use Plex and to manage my movies or watch YouTube and everything. Yep. So a great keyboard like that can handle a beer spill would be great for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the other thing that really stands out is the battery life on it. It's, you know, like it's getting an average battery life of, well, let me just kind of backtrack a little bit. Logitech says that the battery life should last 3 months in between charges. That's a lot of time. Now my colleague over at G-Style got to review it and didn't have it for 3 months. So we can't really speak to the 3 month, battery life, but, it's been charged once and it was pretty much used straight through a month without any issues. For me personally, the small keys can be a bit of a problem. It's a little bit tight. It's a little bit crowded. But overall, you know, this is not something that you're going to be, you know, drafting your manuscript on. This is something that you're going to kind of, like you mentioned, if you have a HT PC set up in the living room, if you're just not really looking to, you know, hunt and peck using a wireless, you know, your traditional television remote to, you know, search on Netflix, then this might be the way for you to go. I really like it. It's it doesn't have iOS key commands, so if you're using an iOS device, that might be a bit of a deal breaker. I'm sorry, I misspoke. It actually does have a full roll of iOS specific commands. So, you know, whether you're iOS, Android, or PC, it really won't affect your experience there. So it's something to check out. I'm really you know, impressed by it. And it's not all that expensive. So it's definitely something that if you can find on sale, it's probably worth an impulse buy.
Well, Logitech always makes high quality products. I've had a few of the higher end mice, and I've always been impressed with what I've had from them. Even the old Bluetooth headset I had that was made by them was really well built, and it withstood the test of time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know at work I actually use one of their gaming mechanical keyboards, even though I use an Apple computer at work. I actually swapped out the USB the USB keyboard with the Logitech gaming keyboard. The throw is nice. It's built like a tank. You know, it's the perfect work keyboard. So, yeah, I can't say enough good things about Logitech. I think they strike like that nice balance between form and function, with a little more leaning towards the function side of things. So, you know, definitely if this is something that kind of is on your radar or something that you've long thought about picking up, you know, give the Logitech keys to go a shot, you know, and let us know how you like it. Okay, so we're just kind of zipping along here. I know both Paul and I have had quite long days, and you know, we're really wanting to make sure that we get through this whole list. It's not a lot of the things on here, but it's a few things that really have caught our attention. In a previous episode, we talked about Android P. So now we're officially 3 months since it was announced. Is that about right?
That sounds about right. Yeah, because they've had multiple updates to the developer preview.
Yeah. So where are we with Android P at this point?
Well, I know it's available on, I believe it's like 6 or 7 phones, including the Essential phone, mm-hmm. The Sony Xperia XA2, I believe it is, and then there's even a Xiaomi phone from the Chinese company.
Oh, wow. All right. So I'm not an Android user. I haven't been since the Galaxy Note 5, so I guess like by tech standards, that's an ancient phone now.
That is an ancient phone.
So you know, just to kind of give everyone a quick refresher, what are some of the things that people should be looking out for on Android P?
Well, Google is kind of overhauling it. It's going to be a lot more gesture based interface. Mm-hmm. Definitely seems like they took some ideas from Apple again with the iPhone X series.
Right.
There's going to be things in there for the notches, unfortunately.
So the notches are not going away.
As much as I wish they were, the notches are here to stay.
So now I'm curious, is Android P going to do anything for Android tablets? Because one of my biggest gripes about Android is, on, I guess, like in theory, it should have been an ideal OS for a tablet since it would have so much flexibility. But that just hasn't been the case. Like if you're looking for a tablet, like the de facto answer is buy an iPad. Is Android P going to do anything for Android tablets?
I'm not expecting to see a good Android tablet anytime soon. It looked like it was taking it seriously for a while because they had the Nexus 7, which was a legitimately good tablet. Mm-hmm. The last tablet they released was the Pixel C, which frankly wasn't a good tablet. and it's even been removed from their website. So it kind of states their interest in Android-owned tablets. Now, I think they are moving towards Chrome OS-owned tablets. I do think that's something we'll start seeing in a few years.
Oh, okay. That's cool. That might not be a bad move considering the popularity of Chromebooks, especially in the education space. So,
well, Chromebooks have worked well for a lot of people, and it only makes sense that a lot of people would just lose the laptop form factor and just move to a tablet. Makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. I personally would like to see some real competition in the tablet space. You know, like I love my iPad. It's, you know, quickly becoming my daily driver, and I just kind of reserve my MacBook at home for just anything that requires using full Photoshop, essentially. But beyond that, I pretty much do everything on my iPad, from blog posts to just anything you would otherwise do on a computer.
With how thin, light, and durable my laptop is now, I really have just no desire for a tablet anymore.
Yeah, fair. It's, you know, it's one of those things where I got it as a Christmas gift, and at the time it was, you know, either a new laptop or a tablet, and I chose the tablet mostly because at the time Apple's MacBook Pro line was just it just continues to be a disappointment. I mean, it was definitely a disappointment at the time. It was I think they had just announced the new Touch Bar MacBook Pros, and just kind of seeing the spec sheet and then seeing how much it cost, I was just like, yeah, $3,000 for essentially a year old at the time computer was just not going to cut it.
I thought you Apple fanboys would pay for anything.
Yeah, right. I'm pretty sure there are, and I'm pretty sure like there will be Apple fanboys wanting to string me up. But the truth is, you know, I probably would have been better off with the older model of the HP Spectre. So yeah, I mean, like I could have saved the money and still bought the tablet if I would have went that route.
Well, I bought two separate Android tablets, and each time I bought them, I was like, this isn't the greatest, but I'm sure that Android or Google will improve them if they're popular enough. So I kind of bought into that, and that day just never came. If I was invested in the Apple ecosystem, I probably would have bought an iPad by now, but I'm just not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think that's a big part of it, too. You know, like I mentioned before, my iPad is kind of, you know, like I use it for blog posts. I use it for just kind of like, oddly enough, I actually do use spreadsheets on a regular basis. Part of that is because of my work. And as I mentioned earlier, I use Apple at work as well. So everything kind of flows neatly and, you know, simply in within that walled garden. It's whenever you're trying to step outside of the walled garden where things get a little bit, a little dicey. But again, you know, like nowadays, if you really want to be honest about it, most people are quite comfortable using, you know, Google services. So it doesn't even matter what the device is anymore. It's really just a method to getting onto Google's ecosystem.
Well, you're right about that. And I'm pretty much primarily invested in Google's walled garden because it's kind of what they've been creating at this point with Chrome OS and all the Chrome app or all the Google apps on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that I couldn't justify moving platforms at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of people. I think, you know, I don't think it's as tribal as it was, say, 5 years ago. I think now it's just a matter of these companies have managed to do one thing very well, which was they sold you on their walled garden. And you kept buying into it, and the more you bought into it, the less likely you are to like step out of that anytime soon.
So, and it's the sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, it is. It is, right? Like you know, you figure how much money have you spent on Android devices in, you know, let's just say the last 4 years. You know.
What the amount of money I've invested into the Play Store is probably more than I should, just because I'll quickly buy an app. And I'm like, I never use it. And I just buy it anyway.
I'm supporting
the developers. That's what I'm doing.
There you go. Well, somebody has to. I mean, you know, like all those years of allegedly bootlegged software from on Windows platforms. You know, like an entire generation of developer missed out on their chance to make $1 billion.
Yeah, Instagram did it. So.
Hey, and you know what? It's funny because for the longest, Instagram was iPhone only. They wouldn't even...
I did not.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't know that.
Yep, they were iPhone only for quite a few years, actually. And then, what was it? And then they wouldn't even let you download it to an iPad. Like, it wouldn't work on an iPad.
Well, I can understand that because I hate people taking pictures with their tablets. Anytime I go on vacation, I'm standing there and people are taking pictures of their tablet and they're blocking half the view or whatever I'm looking
at. There's at least one, and they probably are wearing a fanny pack.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with fanny packs, actually.
It's funny. Complete sidebar, but I remember I was in high school, so I'm going to date myself a bit here. I was in high school in the 90s, and there was a time where, like, it was a glorified fanny pack, but it was like these North Face waist packs. Like, they would sit, like, it's essentially a fanny pack, but it just, like, sat on the back of on your back as opposed to the front. Yeah, and like those were like super popular for like one season, and I never understood it, but I probably owned one.
You probably did. We all bought into those trends, especially in high school.
Oh yes, we did. Yes, we did. I'm pretty sure I am not exempt from it. I don't remember it. Maybe I'm blocking it away, but if someone has a picture of me with one, I wouldn't even deny it. Well, speaking of tablets, though, there was a very recent article on Engadget where they were discussing how Adobe has plans to launch a full version of Photoshop for the iPad starting in 2019.
You know, I don't even use an iPad, and I'm going to say finally.
You know, I couldn't agree more with you. And, you know, this is a direct response to Affinity Photo and Affinity Designer. For those who may not be as deep into, I guess, graphic design or even like that kind of that level of photo editing, Affinity basically redid their entire line of photo editing and I guess like Illustrator clone software for Windows and Macs. And then they turned around and they ported full versions of these apps onto the iPad. So, you know, if you can imagine full-fledged Photoshop that wasn't as laggy, that was able to render DNGs quicker, that's essentially Affinity Photo. And then the smart thing about it was that Affinity Photo could be used as kind of as the default editor in Apple's Photos application. So if you open up your photo library, you didn't need to have Lightroom in order to kind of manage your catalog and then edit in Photoshop. It would all work. It was all integrated into Photos. And unlike Adobe, where you'd have to pay essentially $11, $12 a month for, you know, for a continuous subscription, I'll double check it, but I think it was something like, when I bought it, I think it was something like $60 for good, like $60 one time, you download the app from the App Store, and that's it. You owned it forever. And then on the iPad, it was even cheaper. It was like $12. So basically, I've been using Affinity Photo for about a year now on both PC, Mac, and on my iPad. And I've long asked, why the hell doesn't Adobe just, you know, put out Photoshop? Make it $20. Make it part of, you know, the Creative Cloud of, you know, suite of software, but just put something out there. Right now, the closest thing you have is what was it, Photoshop Mix or something like that on the App Store? It's trash. It's absolute trash. It's
basically Photoshop Elements.
Not even. It's more like Pixlr put out a Photoshop clone. And for those that don't know, Pixlr is like one of these browser-based photo editors. So yeah, it's terrible. It's really terrible. Like it's one of those things, like all the things that you'd expect Photoshop to do, it doesn't do. You know, or it doesn't do them well.
Well, frankly, I'm just wondering what took Adobe so long, because by this point, everyone and their mom knows the iPad wasn't exactly a flash in the pan. It's here to stay.
Yeah, and you know, as much money as you know, it's funny because they've actually Adobe has actually put out quite a number of apps on the App Store specifically for the iPad, but none of them were the ones that I guess their main audience would have wanted. You know, like it took them forever to release Lightroom for the iPad, and when they first had it out, it was super limited in what you can do. You know, now they're finally starting to allow you to include profiles, you know, color profiles, like presets, all the things that make, desktop version of Lightroom such a powerful editing tool. They're finally starting to bring that over to the iPad. You know, it's been like 2 years now, you know, and now they're just starting to put out Photoshop for the iPad. So I guess it's better late than never, but at the same time, it's just like now they're it's weird to say that Adobe has to try to catch up.
Do you think it was a matter of power?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What it is, you know, what I think is this. I think Adobe was milking Creative Cloud for all it was worth. Like, they just did not want to, like, they figured the people who need this are going to pay the subscription. And then it's like, well, if they're paying the subscription, we want them on the desktop. We don't want them on an iPad or an iPad Pro. And like now it's just like, now people are like, you know, what's happening is that people are changing the way they work. So where before, you know, laptops, as you mentioned before, laptops were severely, iPads were severely underpowered. You know, they didn't have the processing power needed to, you know, handle multiple layers, I'm assuming. But now that's not the case, right? Like now, you know, the internals of an entry-level laptop might be on par or maybe a little bit underpowered compared to the latest iPad Pro. You know, so I guess the processors are changing. What they can do is absolutely unheard of, like if you think about even 3 years ago. So I'm thinking part of it is you now have like powerful chips in these iPads. But I think the bigger part is that Adobe just got a little greedy. You know, they had a captive audience, they had a captive market. They figured they're not going anywhere. And if we say that this is the only place you can get it, then they'll continue to buy there. But, you know, as I mentioned before, companies like Affinity are giving them a run for their money. You know, Capture One is a legitimate contender in the desktop space. You know, there's quite a number of viable Adobe replacements, and I think Adobe is starting to realize it. So, you know, maybe it'll kick them in the pants, and they'll be able to innovate out of this. Or, you know, maybe Affinity becomes the new, you know, the new shorthand for photoshopping an image. But we'll see.
We'll see. But speaking of the tablets, did you say that Microsoft unveiled the new smaller Surface Pro?
Yes, I did see that. What do you think about that?
I think it was something they should have done a while. It's basically a smaller, more inexpensive Surface Pro.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to work fine for most people. It has okay specs, like for students and things like that.
Yeah.
It's only $400 though, and you're basically getting Windows on a very portable form factor.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think the Surface Go is, you know, it's weird because it doesn't quite, I wouldn't say it's necessarily an iPad competitor or even a Chromebook competitor. I think it's something different. I think it's more like why you would buy a C-Class Mercedes versus, you know, buying a very expensive Toyota. You know, it's all about getting you into, you know, into that line of of product. So, you know, I think Microsoft is really smart in, you know, giving, you know, keeping the Surface of family like a very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm at a loss for words. I'm a podcast, guys. This is terrible. Like, I'm fired. No, what I'm trying to say is the Surface, one of the things that Microsoft has always done is they've always cheapened their brand. And I felt like they were very close to doing that with the line of laptops that they announced about a year ago. Because I think they had... Like, they kind of alluded to the Surface name without it really being a Surface. And now, yeah. Like, they have, like, the Surface Go, I think, is more in line with what that product family should look like. So, you know, you have your Surface Go as kind of your gateway drug to the Surface family. You have your Surface Pro, and then you have your Surface Book.
Again, I'm just going to say it's kind of something they should have done sooner. Because do you remember when the Surface was originally announced, they had the dumb and confusing Surface RT.
Yes, yes.
That literally was an iPad clone running a dumbed down version of Windows for some reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And the stores didn't match. Like the apps you bought in one store didn't work.
Yeah.
The other and vice versa. It was weird.
It was weird and it was bad and it was quickly and smartly killed pretty quickly.
You know, do you remember the Nokia tablets that came from that? They weren't bad looking.
I'd forgotten about those, actually.
Yeah, like they were not bad looking. Like the Nokia RT tablets. The fact that you, like, when you brought that up, that's instantly what I thought about. I was just like, man, those are like some pretty tablets. It's a shame that the OS that it runs is crap.
Yeah, it was. But have you seen what Nokia has been doing here lately, though? They've created some nice Android phones.
They have. I'm actually, that might be one of those things where I totally get that they're pretty much mid-range phones. Am I correct?
They're higher mid-range, but they're not flagships.
Yeah. See, and you know what? I think I would be okay with that because I don't know. I have a soft spot in my heart for Nokia. Like, maybe it's because, like, it was one of the, you know, the first phones that I've ever bought.
I think it was one of the first phones everybody bought.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, it's, man, I gotta look into that. You know what? Thank you, Paul. I think I'm gonna look into, you know, having a backup Nokia.
But the problem with some of these mid-range phones, though, is this is something I've run into, is they do things to try to optimize the software because they know it isn't as good. So it just, you get random slowdowns and, like, the battery life on the phone I got is really good. It will last like a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But I finally dug in and found out why it will last so long. It immediately kills any background process.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So that was the reason. So that's also the reason I wasn't getting those messages from you. Because anytime I opened Hangouts, it was treating it like it was the first time I had opened Hangouts.
Oh wow! So basically, it would essentially just say, "All right, you're not using it, so let's save some battery life here, and let's just like kill all these processes."
That is exactly what it was doing.
Wow. Well, you know, at least now I know that I have to reach you some other way. Smoke signals next time.
Yep, smoke signals. That's the most efficient means of communication.
Oh man, so it's not on the list, but I just feel I have to shout this one thing out. As you know, I review cameras primarily, and in late May, as a matter of fact, it was the day after we posted. Our last episode, Fuji announced the X-T100. So bad on Fuji for not being mindful of when we're doing our podcast, because we would have loved to have shouted them out more at a more relevant time. But
they need to be more considerate.
Exactly. But since this is kind of a year in tech so far, I do have to mention it. How can I describe it? So the XT100, if you're familiar with Fuji's line of cameras, it has kind of a DSLR style to it. Has the fake pentaprism hump in the middle. It has a bunch of dials. Has like the fake leatherette grip. Has the two bars of metal at the top and bottom, or what looks like metal at the top and bottom. And all of that is pretty plain and vanilla, and probably not much to write home about. The technology is pretty decent. It's like having a mini X-T2, which is Fuji's flagship. It doesn't have as many autofocusing points and whatnot, but that's not why I feel like it deserves an honorable mention on our list. One of the things that a lot of these like lower mid-tier cameras tend to do is they offer a lot of consumer features, or features that a lot of consumers say they want, you know, like the fast autofocusing and 4K video more recently. This one does that. But unlike other lower mid-tier cameras, it includes an audio jack and a flip-out screen. So basically, Paul, do you watch any vlogs by any chance?
Not really. That's not
your really thing, right?
I haven't into.
Nope. Well, you know, we missed the boat because apparently vlogs are all the rage with the younger demographics.
They need to get off my lawn.
That they do, but one of the things about vlogging cameras is that they, you know, a lot of times they're kind of being held out on one of these GorillaPod tripods, and they're kind of recording and hoping that the camera that they're using is capturing them, or if, you know, if they quote unquote made it, they're probably using a very expensive camera and doing the same thing. But the good thing about the Fuji XT100, I'm sorry, I keep wanting to call it the XT10. That's a very different camera, but the XT100. Is that it has this nice little flip-out screen. It'll flip out all the way to the left and allow you to essentially monitor yourself as you're recording. So it's a nice little feature. If you wanted to shoot selfies that way, by all means. But really, what it's intended to do is intended to kind of capture this vlogging market. I think it's definitely a good entry point for someone that wants an all-around camera. And it definitely has tons of features where someone who is a more advanced photographer can take advantage of it. And best of all, it's compatible with all of the Fuji lenses. So, you know, I would go so far as to say, you know, buy the camera, get rid of the kit lens, and upgrade to the 35 millimeter as quick as you can. So, all right, so that kind of about wraps up what I had on the list. Paul, is there anything you want to add on there?
Not really. Actually, there is one thing I was thinking about. I'm really hoping we get some better Android Wear watches.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, what's the, where's that at now? I'm trying to think of the last Android Wear watch that I've heard that was announced and really was interesting.
I can't think of one, and I'm a huge Android fanboy. That's kind of exactly what I'm talking about. There was an issue with the chipsets holding them back, and Qualcomm finally announced a new chipset for smartwatches earlier this year. So we may finally get a new decent Android Wear smartwatch at their October event.
Oh, nice, nice. That would be something to look out for sure. Yeah, that would be cool. What I'm really hoping for is kind of a platform agnostic smartwatch. And I realize that more than likely would end up being some flavor of Android, if that ever comes to be. I don't know.
Well, Android Wear does play with iOS, doesn't it?
Does it?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, it's actually not Android Wear anymore. It's called Wear OS. They rebranded for some reason.
It's all about the branding.
Yep.
So
and Google can't keep a consistent brand.
Yeah. Well, you know, what are they now? Like, you know, they were Alphabet and, well, I guess they're still Alphabet.
That's still Alphabet, but they...
We know it's Google. We know it's Google. But, yeah, that would be cool, though, actually. You know, hopefully they don't make them as ginormous as, like, the Moto 360 was.
I loved my Moto 360, actually.
Did you?
Yes.
I thought it was just, like, it was obscenely large. Like, and this is coming from a guy who has a very large face watch on right now, but it was large. It was just way too large.
It has a screen on it. It has to be large.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, and again, I don't want to sound like the Apple fanboy, but that's about the right size.
Actually, I do like the Apple Watch. If the Apple Watch would play nice with Android, I would totally get one.
Yeah, it's a very, very... neat looking watch, you know, and I do like watches. I have two mechanical watches and a chronograph. So, you know, like I do like wearing a watch, but I realize that it's as much jewelry as it is functional.
Yeah. Well, I have the Fitbit Charge 2, which is kind of nice.
This is kind of cool.
But I get annoyed because my phone will vibrate and I try to check my watch and I'll be like, well, that does absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I can see where if you had like a 360 in the past, you probably would want something that's a little more updated and you know, something that's useful to you.
And I like wearing a watch. It's a nice accessory.
Yeah.
It's classy. It's classy.
It is. I totally agree with you on that one. I'm like, it's nice to keep time on your wrist, right?
It is.
All right. I think that does it for now. So hopefully, if we're here, I'd say in December, I think we should do this again and kind of see what the hits and misses were. What do you say?
You think we should wait till December to do another episode?
No. We'll do another one next month. But I think another one of these, like, kind of like the year in tech type of things.
No, I definitely like that idea. I just misunderstood you. It's like, why wait 5 months to do another episode? But okay.
Oh, yeah. No. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think we'd have a podcast if we waited 5 months.
I don't think we would either. That's why I was confused.
No. We'll definitely be back next month for sure. Actually, might be back even a little bit sooner. Later in the week, I will be interviewing street photographer Mason Resnick on his latest book. He's just put out a brand new book covering street photography in Tel Aviv. He's a really interesting guy. He's a student of Gary Winogrand. So if you're a photography buff, you know that he is essentially one of the photographers who essentially defined what street photography is. We're going to talk to him about just what it was like, basically learning the craft under him and also, you know, seeing the changes and the different side of Tel Aviv that he's been able to capture. So that should be fun. It's definitely like a, it's very inside baseball for the photography geeks out there, but hopefully it's just as interesting to those who may not be as familiar with photography. So we look forward to that. We should have that by this weekend, actually. And this episode should be in the can and ready to go in the next couple of days. So, Paul, we're doing this again next month?
We are.
Awesome. All right, Paul, before we get out of here, let them know where they can find you on the internet.
I'm at CNC Geekcast on Twitter. I'm at Combs Paul on Twitter. I'm at cncgeekcast.com. And you can find me at paulcombs24@gmail.com if you just want to email me.
Awesome. And also make sure to subscribe to the CNC Geekcast. They're on Podbean. They're on... You guys are on... Oh, yes, you are. They're on Apple's podcast app and also on Google Play.
We're so everywhere.
Make sure you subscribe and check them out. Listen. And I am Alberto. You can find me at @al_right on Twitter. You can also find me at Noisecast on Twitter. And you can find us everywhere at thenoisecast.com. Make sure to subscribe. We're on Podbean and Stitcher, I believe, starting this month. So check us out, subscribe, give us a like, drop us a comment. And if you want to send us a long, ranty email, you can always reach us at noisecast@thenoisecast.com. Thank you, and we'll catch you in a few weeks. Peace.